Today, we're diving into a fascinating paradox. Most people don't realize how truly magnificent they are. Research suggests up to 80% of us have forgotten our innate potential. Why do you think that sense of personal greatness fades with age?
That's a critical question. As children, we radiate self-belief and uniqueness, but over time, external influences and self-judgment erode that awareness. In fact, studies in developmental psychology show that self-esteem peaks in early childhood, then steadily declines through adolescence and adulthood.
It's striking to think we're born knowing our worth. To build on that, can you highlight any evidence from neuroscience or psychology that supports this idea?
Absolutely. Brain imaging reveals that young children's default neural modes are associated with curiosity and self-acceptance, whereas adults display heightened activity in regions tied to self-critique, particularly the medial prefrontal cortex. This shift reflects learned patterns rather than innate flaws.
Let's transition to how early environments shape our self-perception. Many people, regardless of background, experience self-doubt rooted in childhood. What's the psychological mechanism at play here?
Children are wired to seek safety and belonging from caregivers. When love or stability is inconsistent, kids often internalize the belief that they're unworthy, rather than risk viewing caregivers as flawed. This defense mechanism, while protective in youth, becomes a handicap in adulthood.
That's a powerful insight. Are there any longitudinal studies that show how these early narratives persist into later life?
Indeed. The Harvard Study of Adult Development, one of the longest-running life studies, found that perceptions formed in the first decade often predict adult self-esteem and resilience even more than academic or financial success.
You mentioned an internal voice, the judge, that forms in response to these early messages. Can you elaborate on how this inner judge operates and its impact on our daily lives?
The judge is a mental construct developed to rationalize pain and insecurity. It continuously evaluates ourselves and others, often harshly. This can manifest as chronic self-criticism or judgment toward others, what psychologists call projection. Over time, it distorts reality and limits growth.
Do you think most people even realize this judge is active?
Not typically. Like background noise, it's so constant that we mistake it for our true self. Only through self-reflection or feedback from others do we start to recognize its pervasive influence.
Building on the judge concept, your research identifies a broader cast of internal saboteurs. Could you explain what these are and why they matter?
Certainly. Saboteurs are subpersonalities, each with their own motivation like control, acceptance, or security and style, such as asserting or avoiding. Common types include the controller, victim, pleaser, and stickler. They develop as coping mechanisms, but eventually sabotage our happiness and productivity.
Are these saboteurs universal, or do they vary widely among individuals?
While everyone has a unique saboteur profile, almost all people possess the judge plus, at least one or two others. Their dominance can depend on environment, upbringing, and even cultural context.
Let's shift to the brain. You distinguish between the saboteur-driven survival brain and the sage-driven positive intelligence brain. What's happening neurologically in these two modes?
Saboteurs activate regions like the limbic system and left brain circuits, which are wired for threat detection and stress. The sage, by contrast, draws on the middle prefrontal cortex and insular cortex, areas associated with empathy, creativity, and resilience. This isn't just metaphor. Functional MRI studies confirm these patterns.
So, the struggle between saboteurs and sage is literally a battle between brain networks?
Precisely. It's a neurochemical tug of war. Saboteur activation floods your body with cortisol and adrenaline, while sage activation releases oxytocin and dopamine, fostering well-being and clarity.
Now, many high achievers appear outwardly successful, but feel empty or anxious inside. How do saboteurs contribute to this paradox of successful unhappiness?
Saboteurs drive relentless achievement as a means of proving worth, but their rewards are fleeting. A global CEO survey revealed that over 60% of executives privately struggle with imposter syndrome, anxiety, or loneliness, despite public perceptions of confidence.
That's a sobering statistic. Can you give a hypothetical example of how this might play out in someone's life?
Imagine a top surgeon whose hyperachiever saboteur fuels perfectionism. She earns accolades but never feels enough, resulting in chronic stress and strained relationships, even as her resume grows more impressive.
If saboteurs are so deeply embedded, how can people begin to recognize and weaken their influence?
The first step is mindful recognition. When a critical thought arises like, I'm a failure, label it as a saboteur, not as truth. This simple act creates psychological distance, a technique supported by cognitive behavioral therapy research.
Could you share an analogy to help listeners grasp this process?
Think of saboteur thoughts as spam emails. If you instantly believe every spam message, chaos ensues. But once you learn to spot and filter them, your mental inbox becomes far more manageable and positive.
Once saboteur thoughts are labeled, what's the next step? How does the sage perspective help us reframe setbacks?
The sage asks, how can this situation become a gift or opportunity? For example, failure on a project becomes a catalyst for new learning or creative innovation. This mindset shift is linked to greater psychological resilience, as shown in studies on post-traumatic growth.
Does this mean ignoring negative emotions or just reframing them?
Not at all. It's about acknowledging feelings with compassion, then exploring solutions with curiosity, much like an explorer fascinated by what's under every rock instead of being paralyzed by fear.
You've described practical ways to strengthen the sage, especially through focused attention on physical sensations. What's the science behind this technique?
Research shows that briefly shifting attention to the senses, like savoring the taste of an apple or feeling a loved one's heartbeat, activates the positive intelligence brain. Regular practice, even just a few seconds, several times an hour, builds mental resilience, similar to how physical exercise strengthens muscles.
Are there measurable benefits to this practice?
Yes. Increases in what's called the positive intelligence quotient, or PQ, correlate with up to 40% improvements in sales and one-third gains in team performance, according to independent studies.
As we approach our final segment, how can individuals foster sage qualities in their loved ones, especially children?
Modeling unconditional love is key. Rather than tying praise to achievements or traits, affirm children's intrinsic worth. I love you because you're you. Research on attachment theory shows this approach builds lifelong self-confidence and resilience.
That's a beautiful message. In closing, what would life look like if more people reclaimed their sage and let go of their saboteurs?
We'd see greater creativity, empathy, and joy, both individually and collectively. When people remember their true magnificence, it doesn't just change their own lives, it uplifts families, communities, and even workplaces. The ripple effect is profound.